Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from the golden age of radio. I'm Mark Levonier. In this hour, mystery. Later on, a detective-style story on suspense. But right now, it's Alexander Pushkin's famous tale, The Queen of Spades, adapted on the Mystery in the Air series, starring film actor Peter Lorre, from the 11th of September, 1947, on NBC.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre.
But Countess, are you sure you want to put all your winnings on a single card?
Absolutely sure, my dear Duke.
Well, I don't know how it is in Russia, but here in Paris, it is very seldom that anyone wins on three cards in succession.
The game of faro is the same in Russia as anywhere else. But I wish to put the whole amount, 400,000 francs, on my next card.
As you wish, madame. I will deal.
I have won.
No.
Look, I have won. See, Duke, you were wrong.
Yes, I was. Hello.
What's the matter?
Peter Lorre, in the excitement of the great stories of the strange and unusual, of dark and compelling masterpieces culled from the four corners of world literature. Tonight, The Queen of Spades by Alexander Pushkin.
The story I'm about to tell you, you may not believe, but I assure you it actually happened. Now, the whole thing started one night when a group of young officers were having a game of cards at the rooms of Narumov of the Horse Guard. There were five of us there, including a lieutenant in the engineers named Hermann. He was the son of a German who had become a naturalized Russian. And he was an ambitious young man of strong passions and imagination, which he held in check by an even stronger will. Thus, though a born gambler at heart, Hermann never touched a card, for he considered his financial position did not allow it. Oh, I remember that night. At about 4 in the morning, we all sat down to supper.
Oh, I'm not hungry.
How did you make out, Surin?
I lost.
You always lose, Surin. You must be very strong-minded to be so consistent.
If you think he is strong-minded, how about yourself, Hermann? Yeah.
Me? Why me?
You've never held a card in your hand or made a bet. And yet you sit here until 4 o'clock in the morning watching us play.
Well, Tomsky, you see, gambling interests me. It interests me very much. In fact, I'm a gambler at heart, but I'm not in a financial position to sacrifice the necessary in a hope for winning the superfluous. In other words, I cannot afford it.
That doesn't explain anything. We none of us can afford it.
Oh, Hermann's easy enough to understand. He's of German descent, therefore he's thrifty.
Right.
Now, it's my grandmother, the Countess Fedotovna, who baffles me. You know, she won't gamble either.
Oh, lots of grandmothers don't gamble. St. Petersburg is full of them.
Ah, yes, but they don't know the secret my grandmother knows.
Huh? Secret? What kind of secret does she know?
Something we'd all of us give a lot to possess.
Huh?
Yeah, a combination of three cards that can't fail to win at the faro table.
Hmm? Oh, there's no such thing.
What are you trying to tell us?
Oh, let's go home. It's
wait,
late.
Wait, Tomsky, I'd like to know more about this secret.
What do you care, Herman? You don't gamble.
Still, I'd like to hear about it.
All right. Many years ago, when my grandmother was a lot younger, she went to Paris. Oh, she must have been quite a sensation. The Muscovite Venus, they called her. Anyway, she gambled at faro with the Duke of Orleans. Lost a great deal of money, much more than she could pay.
Yeah, who does?
Come on, keep quiet, will you?
Well, there was at that time a Count Saint-Germain in Paris.
Yes.
A mysterious figure that no one knew much about. Well, be that as it may. He revealed to my grandmother the secret of the three winning cards.
And did she win?
That night she played again with the Duke d'Orléans.
Yeah.
Played the three cards, one after the other, doubling her bet each time. and all three won, and she recovered everything she had lost 10 times over.
Oh, a little hard on the Duke, don't you think?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he dropped dead, I believe. It was a long time ago.
Oh, come on, Tomsky, go on with the story.
Well, that's all there is. My grandmother never touched a card again.
You mean she knows how to pick three winning cards in succession, and you haven't succeeded in getting the secret out of her?
That's the devil of it. She had four sons, one of whom was my father, and yet she would never reveal the secret to any of them, though it wouldn't have been a bad thing for them.
Nor for you either, huh?
I've had enough.
I'm going home.
Well, I'll go along with you.
All right, come along.
Tomsky, tell me, this grandmother of yours, Countess Fedotovna, does she live in St. Petersburg?
Yes, with a ward of hers named Lizaveta. Poor girl, she is supposed to be my grandmother's companion, but slave would be a better word for it.
Your grandmother's a widow?
Yes. Oh, now, don't get your hopes up, Herman. She's a bit too old for you. She's 86 if she's a day.
Still, I should like to meet her.
No, there's not much chance of it, I'm afraid. She doesn't go about much anymore.
But I still should like to meet her. Yes, I should like to meet her very much.
Lizaveta?
Hello, Paul.
Don't tell me my grandmother is here.
No, but she is going to the embassy ball tomorrow. Tonight, I came alone.
Oh, while the cat's at home, the mouse will play, huh? What's this I've been hearing about you?
About me?
All very romantic, I understand.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, come, Lizaveta. You can't tell me that you don't know about the mysterious officer who's been standing outside the house for the last 2 weeks. About the notes he hands you when you get into the carriage with my grandmother. About the letters he sends by the milliner's girl.
Who told you?
Great friend of your officer. A lieutenant in the engineers named Hermann.
Hermann. Oh, yes, I think I've heard of him. Is he nice?
Oh, I like him very much. But he's a very determined young man and means to get what he wants. Personally, I wouldn't trust him. He has the profile of Napoleon and the soul of Mephistopheles.
Oh, good evening, Tomsky. Good evening.
Speak of the devil. Hello there, Hermann. Lizaveta, may I present Lieutenant Hermann?
Mademoiselle?
The man we were just talking about. Hermann, this is Lizaveta Ivanovna. It's my grandmother's ward.
How do you do, Mademoiselle Lizaveta?
How do you do, Lieutenant?
Would you like to dance?
Yes, I would love to.
Good. See you later, Tomsky. Oh, this is paradise, Lizaveta. Holding you in my arms, feeling your heart beat against mine.
No, you mustn't say things like that. People will hear you. They'll talk.
I don't care.
They're talking already. Why did you make up that story about your imaginary friend to tell Tomsky?
Because I didn't want him to know it was I, and I had to talk about you to somebody.
I hope the Countess doesn't hear about it.
Devil with her. It's not the Countess I'm in love with. It's you. Oh, Lizaveta, this is so wonderful. It makes up for all those nights I stood outside your house and...
Look, there in the door. There's the Contessa's coachman come to fetch me. I must go home.
When am I going to see you again?
I don't know.
Oh, but this is horrible. My heart is burning with things I want to tell you, but I can never, never see you alone. There must be some way.
There is a way.
Yes, how?
Take this.
Oh.
This is the key to the Contessa's house.
Oh, Lizaveta.
Tomorrow night, we're going to the embassy ball. We'll be home at 2. If you let yourself into the house at about 11:30, all the servants will be asleep.
Yes, I will.
Go directly to the library. It's at the right end of the corridor at the top of the stairs. Wait for me there.
Right end of the corridor. Oh, you sweet Lizaveta. I adore you. Where's the Countess' room?
At the other end of the corridor. Why do you ask me that?
I don't want to get into the wrong room by mistake.
But now I must go.
Till tomorrow night at 2 o'clock. Au revoir, chérie. Mademoiselle, good night.
Good night, my child.
Countess, are you sure there's nothing you want me to do for you?
No, nothing, thank you, Lizaveta. I think I will just put my jewels away and sit quietly a while by myself. Good night.
Good night.
I am so tired. So very tired. I am too old to go. What's that?
Don't be alarmed, madame.
Who are you?
Please don't be alarmed, Countess. I have no intention of harming you, but please.
How did you get in my bedroom?
I have been waiting behind that curtain, waiting just for the chance to ask you a favor.
A favor?
Yes.
Of me?
Yes, a favor of you, madame. You can ensure the happiness of my life. It'll cost you nothing.
I don't know who you are, but you're mad.
No, I'm not. I happen to know that you can name 3 winning cards in order. And...
Oh, that was a joke.
No, it was not a joke. Oh, I can see it by your expression, madame. Madame, I want you to tell me those 3 winning cards I do.
No, no.
But whom are you keeping that secret for, huh? Your grandsons, they are rich enough without it. Besides, they don't know the value of money, but I do. Your cards will not be thrown away.
No, no. It is a cursed. It brings death.
I'll chance that. Of what use is it to you? Or is it connected with some terrible sin or some bargain with the devil, huh? I'm ready to take your sins upon my soul, only... Please, please reveal the secret to me.
No.
Please.
What I did.
You. You won't catch. I'll make you answer.
No.
I want
no.
You. You have my happiness in your hands.
No.
I'll take you to...
Let go.
You,
my
you won't speak. Huh? I'll no. Make you... You... She won't tell me. She won't tell me. I'm...
Countess, is everything... You?
Yes, it is I.
But I don't understand. Where's the Countess?
There she is.
Countess, what's the...
It's no use. She's dead.
Dead?
Yes, dead. She's taking with her the one thing I wanted in the world. Without which I don't want to face life.
You killed her!
Yes, but you're not going to say anything to her. No one knows I was in the house except you. You can't tell because you gave me the key.
But you killed her.
Yes, yes, I killed her. I killed her. She deserved to die. But now I'll never know her secret. Never, no one will ever know her secret. unless she comes back to tell it to somebody.
In a few moments, Mr. Peter Lorre will bring us the climax of tonight's Mystery in the Air. So the Countess is dead, and now the funeral is in progress. What a stupendous funeral. The huge church is banked with flowers, all the way from the doors to the catafalque where the coffin rests. And such a distinguished group of mourners. It almost seems as if all Imperial Russia is there.
Tomsky. A sad occasion, eh?
Yes. Well, I suppose the old girl had to go sooner or later. Oh, there were times when I doubted she ever would.
What'd she die of?
Well, heart attack, they said. Why?
Oh, I've heard rumors. You know how those things are. Something about bruises on her throat.
Oh, no, no. No, nothing to it, no. The doctor said she could have inflicted those herself when she had trouble breathing.
Hello, Tomsky. My condolences.
Oh, thank you for coming, Herman. That's very nice of you. You never met my grandmother, did you?
No, I didn't, but that's no reason I shouldn't show my respect. After all, you're my friend.
I beg your pardon, but would you gentlemen care to view the remains before the services commence?
I suppose I should, anyway.
Oh, yes, by all means.
I'll come, too, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Thank you.
Come along. Doesn't she look peaceful? Poor old girl, I was fond of her.
Wait. Wait, did you see that?
What? See what?
Look, one of her eyelids moved.
What?
I tell you.
Herman, be quiet.
But I saw it. Her eyelids moved as if she winked at me, as if she winked.
He's fainting.
A fine example of an army officer fainting at a funeral.
No, maybe he's sick. Come on. Help me carry him out of here.
Oh, I know. I shall never get to sleep. My conscience won't let me. Oh, why did I do it? Why did I go to that cursed funeral just because my conscience said you are the murderer of that old woman? I wanted to implore her pardon, but she winked at me. I could swear it, she did. Who's there? Who?
You do not recognize me. You have a short memory.
Countess,
I have come back from the beyond against my wishes. Huh? I have been ordered to grant your request.
Grant my request?
Yes. 3, 7, and 8 will win for you if played in succession.
3, 7, and an 8.
But only on these conditions.
Anything
that
at all.
You do not play more than one card in 24 hours. And that you never play cards again during the rest of your life.
What? I promise. 3, 7, and an 8. 3, 7, and an 8. Oh, I must remember it. 3, 7, 8. 3, 7, 8.
Are you all right?
All right. Yes, I'm all right.
Well, that's good. We were worried about you. We hadn't seen you since you collapsed at my grandmother's funeral.
Oh, that was terrible, Lieutenant. An officer shouldn't faint. I hope you'll forgive me for what happened yesterday.
Oh, that's all right. Could have happened to anyone. But it wasn't yesterday, you know. It was the day before.
Day before? Oh, I don't remember that.
You must have been pretty sick to lose a whole day like that. What got into you?
Tomsky, will you do me a favor?
If I can, what is it?
I've heard a lot about a certain Chekalinsky and the gambling that goes on at his house every night.
Oh, yes. Chekalinsky has practically spent his whole life at the card table.
That's what I heard.
Oh, he's amassed millions at it, but what...
I should like to go there.
Oh, you want to watch them play faro at Chekalinsky?
No, I want to play.
You want to play?
Yes.
What's happened to you, Herman? I thought you couldn't afford to gamble.
Yes, but now I can. I have a little legacy left from my father. And
congratulations.
I feel I'm in luck. When can you take me?
Anytime.
Tonight?
Yes, if you feel up to it.
Good, that's very good. We'll go to Chekalinsky's tonight, huh?
Thank you.
honestly, I have never seen such a magnificent establishment. Never in my life have I seen such a place.
Well, it's all paid for by fellows like you who felt they were in luck. Look, there's Chuck Alinsky at the faro table.
Where? Oh.
Come on over. I'll introduce you. But don't say I didn't warn you.
Good evening, Gomsky.
Chuck Alinsky, mm-hmm. I want you to meet a friend of mine, Lieutenant Hermann. Hermann? This is the famous Chuck Alinsky.
Good evening.
Enchanté.
Hermann seems to feel particularly fortunate tonight. Do you suppose he could sit in and take a card?
A friend of yours? But of course.
Good luck, Hermann.
Thanks.
Will you be kind enough to select your card, please?
Thank you. This is my card.
And how much would you like to bet, Lieutenant?
I would like to bet 47,000 rubles.
Forgive me, Lieutenant, but we only play for cash.
It's quite all right. I have it. Money's right here.
Are you crazy, Hermann?
You're playing pretty high, Lieutenant. Nobody here has ever staked anything like that on one card before.
Well, do you accept it or don't you?
I accept it.
Then if you'll be kind enough to deal.
As you wish. 9-3.
Hermann has won. One. Look, his card is a 3.
Well, congratulations, Lieutenant. Do you want me to settle with you now?
If you please.
Here you are. 47,000 rubles.
No.
Would you like to try again?
No. Not tonight, but tomorrow night I'll be back to try another card.
Well, Lieutenant, what do you want to wager tonight?
Same stake as last night, plus my winnings, 94,000 rubles.
Just as you say. You have picked your card. I will deal. Knave, 7.
Look, Hermann's won again. The card is returned.
There you are. 94,000 rubles.
Thank you, sir. I shall see you again tomorrow night.
I don't believe he'll show up. He'd be a fool to come.
Here he comes now, with Tomsky.
Now, he can't win 3 times in a row. It is impossible.
Gentlemen, quiet, please. Well, Lieutenant Hermann, how much do you wish to bet tonight?
Same stake plus my winnings. Here it is. 180,000 rubles.
On one card?
Yes.
Hermann, don't you think that...
Please be quiet, Tomsky. I know what I'm doing.
Gentlemen, please. Will you choose your card, Lieutenant?
I have it. Will you please deal?
Queen. Ace.
I win again. Ace wins. Here it is.
Huh? If you'd been holding an ace, you would have won. But you haven't an ace. You have a queen, and it loses.
What do you mean?
You weren't holding an ace, my dear fellow. You have the queen of spades.
Queen?
Look. Look
queen
at
of,
it yourself.
Queen of spades? What? It is impossible. Yes, it is the queen of spades. No, I see it, but look it. It isn't the queen of spades. It's the countess. Look. See the resemblance? Yes. Oh, she's tricked me. She's deliberately tricked me.
What are you talking about?
Your grandmother, the countess. She told me 3, 7, and 8.
She told you?
Yes, she
did. Well, you never met her.
I did meet her. I waited for her one night in her bedroom, and I pleaded with her. But she refused to tell me. She refused to tell me her secret. And then I took her by the throat.
And you killed her,
huh?
You took her by the throat and strangled her.
I killed her, yes, but she didn't tell me that. But then one night she came back. She came back from the grave and she told me 3 cards. It was 7. But she lied. She lied to me. Oh, that dirty woman.
He's got no revenge. I've lost all the money I had in the world, but I don't care anymore. But I'll show her. Let go!
You murder the count! You'll hang for that!
Let them hang me! Let them hang me! I'll get even with her. Beyond the grave, I'll get even with her.
You're mad!
I'll be glad when they hang me. I'll be glad when they hang me!
But they didn't hang him. He's spending the rest of his life in room 17 of the Obukhov Hospital. He never answers any question, but constantly mutters the same thing.
378.
Next week, Mystery in the Air, starring Mr. Peter Lorre, brings you one of the greatest American classics of all time, The Black Cat by Edgar Allan Poe, with a special musical score composed and conducted by Paul Barron.
Listen again next week at this same time when the makers of Camel Cigarettes present Mr. Peter Lorre in Mystery in the Air. The artists supporting Mr. Lorre tonight were Henry Morgan, Loreen Tuttle, Peggy Weber, Ben Wright, Louis Van Ruten, Stanley Waxman, Jack Edwards Jr., and Rolf Sedan. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Mystery in the Air, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 11th, 1947 on NBC. Peter Lorre was the star in the program and would be every week during the run of this short-lived series, always giving a tremendous performance that would usually feature him in a fervorous climax, with the scripts chosen so he could do just that. On screen in the year of this episode, he was in only one motion picture, alongside Bob Hope, Dorothy L'Amour, and Lon Chaney Jr. in the role of Kismet in My Favorite Brunette. You are listening to an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Now on to radio's outstanding theater of thrills, suspense, from late in their radio run, with a story written by George Bamber, who reliably turned in about a dozen compelling scripts for the series, many of them with a science fiction bent. It's the tale The Green Lorelei, from November 6, 1960, on CBS.
And now, another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The Green Lorelei, written for Suspense by George Bamber.
My name is Adams. Roger Adams. Maybe you've heard of me. I write for the pulp magazines. Mystery stories, horror stories at 2 and 3 cents a word. But then again, maybe you haven't, because it's been a long time since I've written anything, and even longer since I've sold anything I've written. Maybe that's why nobody believes me, because of what I did for a living and what happened afterwards. It all happened in Los Angeles, a place they call the City of the Angels. I was living in a broken-down apartment house that overlooked that cultural desert that is the city of Hollywood. It was late at night, one hot, smoggy August. I'd spent the whole day sitting, staring at a typewriter that sat staring back at me. I hadn't been able to write a word for days. Finally, I got fed up with it all, and I took 50 cents of my last $2. I went down, and I bought 2 bottles of cold beer. And on my way back up to my...
Well, Mr. Adams.
Oh, Mrs. Snyder.
I thought if I listened at my door long enough, I'd catch you sneaking up and downstairs.
No, I wasn't sneaking.
Well, I'd like to know what you call it, walking on the sides of the steps that way.
Now, Mrs. Snyder, you have an extremely suspicious and unpleasant nature.
When are you going to pay me the money you owe me?
At the end of the week.
You've been saying that more than a month now.
Well, now, this time it's true. I just sold another horror story to Authentic Mysteries, and the check is in the mail. Now, I thought it would be here today.
Well, I've heard that one before.
No, I swear it's true. Now, please, Mrs. Snyder, you have got to trust me. I will have the money for you by the end of the week.
Well?
Friday, for sure. Everything I owe you, I promise.
Well, why can't you have a little of it now, on account, $5 or $10,
because
maybe?
Because I don't have $5 or $10, maybe.
See, you got enough to spend on beer.
Mrs. Snyder, it cost me 50 cents for 2 bottles of beer, and that's all I've had all day. Now, if you like, there's a 2-cent deposit on each bottle. I'll bring them down to you when I'm done.
Now, don't get smart with me. I've been very lenient with you.
I told you, you will get your money at the end of the week.
Well, you better. If you don't, out you go. You hear me, Mr. Adams? If you don't pay the full rent by the end of the week, out you go. Bag and baggage down on the street. I don't see why you can't get a job like normal men and pay your rent on time instead of fooling around with them mystery and horror magazines.
I stood with my back to the door until I regained my self-control. The room was still the same, the rumpled bed, the sock hanging from the sink, the litter of papers on the floor. I went to the kitchen, rummaged around until I found a can opener. The beer tasted disappointingly warm as the night, and sour and bitter as the day. I went to the typewriter, but it was no good. The same sheet of paper I'd rolled into it 5 days ago sat staring up at me, blank, white, and unyielding. Finally, I turned off the light and I sat down in front of my window, staring out at the winking, blinking, happy lights of Hollywood, wondering what to do next. I was at the end of my rope. I was broke. At the end of the week, I'd be evicted for non-payment of rent. But worst of all, I couldn't write. Not a single idea came to my head. And then... I heard her voice, the voice of the woman upstairs. I had heard it many times before, sometimes when I sat unable to write, mostly at night. To me, she had the most beautiful voice of any woman I'd ever heard. And I imagined her to be like her voice, soft and lovely like her voice. But then it occurred to me that I didn't know what she looked like. In all the months I'd lived in Mrs. Snyder's apartment house, I'd never once seen her. I'd seen her husband many times as he went back and forth on his way to work. He was a short, ugly little man. And it seemed impossible that he could be married to a woman who sang as beautifully as that. Suddenly I was overwhelmed with a desire to know who the woman was and what she looked like. I grabbed a cup from the kitchen and I raced up the stairs to the apartment above. Hi there. I'm Mr. Adams from the apartment below.
So?
Well, I hate to bother you, but I was just sitting down to dinner when I discovered that I was fresh out of coffee. I wondered if I could borrow some from you.
I don't drink coffee.
Oh? Well, how about tea? Just a couple of teaspoons full. I hate to eat a meal without something to drink, and I don't want to run down to the store and let my dinner get cold.
Give me the cup.
Took the cup and closed the door in my face before I could see anyone else in the apartment. But not before I got an impression of what it was like. It was laid out the same as mine, only cleaner. But it looked old and dirty. Maybe it was the furniture. It was old and black, like it had been brought over from the old country or belonged to a man much older than Mr. Steinmetz. We'd lived alone a long time.
Here you are.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. You're
Mr. Steinmetz, aren't you?
Yes, fine.
Well, I thought that's who you were. I saw your name on the mailbox downstairs, and I thought I might as well introduce myself. I'm Mr. Adams in the apartment below.
I know.
And I thought since we live in the same building, there's no reason why we can't be neighbors as well as friends, huh? Well, is your wife at home?
What makes you ask that?
Well, on my way up, I heard a woman singing. I thought it was your wife and wanted to compliment her on what a beautiful voice she had.
My wife is dead.
Oh. Oh, I'm very sorry. Well, it must have been your daughter, then.
You heard no woman here.
Oh, Mr. Steinmetz, I stood right outside this door and I heard her just as plain.
You heard nothing. My wife is dead.
I stood in the hallway stunned. I had heard a woman singing, I was sure of that. But why had he lied? I went back to my apartment trying to figure it out. I sat in the darkness with the warmer second bottle of beer and... I heard her again, more clearly and distinctly than I'd ever heard her before. There was a woman up there, I was sure of that now. But who was she, and what was she doing there, and why had the old man lied? Tomorrow, when he went to work, I'd find out the answer to that. Now, the night passed slowly, the gray hours of dawn slower still. 7 o'clock came, 7:30. At 8, I saw Eric Steinmetz leave the building with his lunch bucket under his arm. I knew he never returned home before 6. And that meant I had 10 hours. I wanted to rush upstairs right away, but I made myself wait until I was sure that she was there. At 10 o'clock, I was sure. I crept up the stairs of the hall, using the sides of the steps so they wouldn't creak. My heart beating in my mouth. The closer I got, the louder her voice became. And at the door, it sounded as if she were standing just on the other side. Hello, Mrs. Steinmetz. Are you there? Mrs. Steinmetz, this is Mr. Adams, the man in the apartment below. I wonder if I could see you a moment. Mrs. Steinmetz? I knew she was there. Something was there. Through the wood of the door, I could hear breathing. Feel a heart beating. I had to see the inside of that apartment, no matter what it cost.
What do you mean you lost your key?
I didn't lose it. I left it in my room and I locked myself out and I wondered if I could borrow your master key.
I can't let anybody have that.
Well, I only wanted for a minute just to open my door.
Well, why can't you hang on to your own key?
I told you it was an accident. It could happen to anybody.
You're the worst one I got. You don't pay your rent, you lock yourself out.
Now, look, please, please, Mrs. Snyder, let me have the key. Please. Now, I will run up and I'll open the door and I'll bring it right back. And I will have your rent for you at the end of the week.
Well, okay. But you bring it right back down here. I'll be waiting right here. I'll be waiting until you do. I don't want any funny business in my apartment.
As I ran up the stairs to my room, I fished out the pieces of wax I had put in my pocket. At the door, I squeezed them together over the key, hard. In my mystery stories, I had written about this method of obtaining keys hundreds of times. But I had never once done it myself, so I wanted to be sure I did it right.
Well, what's taking you so long?
I'll be right there. I pulled the two pieces of wax apart. The impression was clear and perfect. I opened the door with my own key and raced back down the stairs.
Well, what took you so long?
I had trouble with the door. Well, thank you, Mrs. Snyder.
Well, I've got to run. I'm late as it is.
Well, when are you going to pay me that money that you owe me?
Later, later.
This is a very difficult thing you ask, Mr.
Smith.
Yes, of course, Mr. Smith. It is not only difficult, but it is against the law.
Well, that's all right. I'm a special investigator.
You have credentials, then?
No, not on me. You see, I'm not allowed to carry them because of the nature of this case.
Oh, I see. Well, allow me to introduce myself. I am the President of the United States.
Well, now, look, are you going to do it or not? There are plenty of other locksmiths in this town.
I would not touch this key for less than $50.
What?
I'm sorry, Mr. Smith.
Well, look, here is my watch. It cost me $200 new. Now, will you take that instead?
It cost you maybe $35 new. But,
Well, now, will you do it or not?
I see by the president's new watch that Congress is now in session.
It was 2 o'clock by the time I stood outside her door again. That gave me 4 hours before Steinmetz came home. I knocked.
Mrs. Steinmetz, are you home?
I stood listening for a long time before I slipped one of my newly made keys in the door. Hello, Mrs. Steinmetz. Are you home? There was no answer, so I stepped inside, closing the door after me. The apartment appeared the same as it had the day before. But somehow, it was emptier now. I crossed the worn, carpeted floor to the curtains covering the small kitchenette.
Mrs. Steinmetz?
I shoved the curtains aside. It was empty. I turned in the thick, hot stillness of the afternoon apartment and started toward the bedroom door. Halfway there, I was stopped by something that caught my eye on the round table in the center of the living room. It was just a picture. At first glance, it looked like a picture of two people standing together, but as I looked at it closer, I realized it wasn't of people at all, but a close-up of two animals or reptiles that only looked like people. They didn't have any hair or ears, and the surface of their skin was scaled like a snake's. I was about to search around for more pictures when I realized she was singing again, and it was coming from the bedroom door. I ran across the room and I threw it open. The blinds were drawn in the hot, stuffy room, and in the darkness, a single candle burned. As my eyes adjusted to its light, I could make out a sleek bronze casket sitting at the other side of the room. Now, in my career as a writer of mystery horror stories, I've killed off about 500 people and come across countless bodies, murdered in foul and devious ways, but never once has I been alone in a room with a closed casket, or open one by myself. It took a great deal of courage to force myself across the room and even more to place my hands on the cool metal of the lid. And then with an effort, I raised it. It was empty. The candlelight played on the quilted white satin lining of an empty coffin.
Mrs. Steinmetz? I know you're in here, Mrs. Steinmetz, and I intend to find you. I started going through the boxes and trunks and junk piled in the bedroom. I know she was in the apartment someplace. I could hear her voice. And dead or alive, I intended to find her. I went through the living room, the kitchen, overturning, pulling things apart. knocked, and I was about to give up when I saw the closet door. I'd never noticed that before. I stumbled across the room to get to it, and then I tore it open.
She was beautiful. She was easily the most beautiful girl who had ever lived. She had long yellow hair that tumbled over her shoulders in a golden cascade. A small red mouth and clear blue eyes. And as I stood there staring at them, I realized they had that half-dead, half-live, never-dead, never-having-lived look that I'd seen on the faces of effigies in a wax museum. Cautiously, I reached out and pulled my fingernails down her cheek.
What are you doing? Out! Out of my apartment! Out! I throw you out myself!
Mrs. Steinmetz!
Out and stay out! You come back and I call the police!
He wasn't going to call the police. I was.
But, officer, I saw it. The body was right here in this closet.
Well, it isn't there now.
But I saw it with my own eyes.
Mr. Adams, we've searched this whole apartment and haven't found anything that even faintly resembles a body.
Well, how about the casket? He hasn't explained that yet.
Yeah. Mr. Steinmetz, how about that?
Officer, I am old man. My wife died 20 years ago. I think I die too soon. I buy coffin. I not die, but I still have coffin, so I keep it here. There's no crime against that, is there?
No, I guess there ain't.
But how about this man? He break into my house, tear up my goods.
He is lying. The man is a maniac. His wife died, and he preserved her in wax somehow. I tell you, I saw her with my own eyes.
All right, where's her body now?
Well, I don't know.
You can't support your charges without a corpus delicti.
Oh, officer, he's crazy as a loon. He causes nothing but trouble.
Now, wait. I dug my fingernail in the wax on her face. Some of it is still there, you see?
Green wax, Mr. Adams. Anybody could dig their fingernails in a green wax candle.
Well, it wasn't green before.
Oh, run him down to the station house.
No, wait. I want no trouble. Just he don't bother me no more. That's all I care. He leave me alone. Let him go.
Well, I can't very well hold him unless you're willing to press charges.
Please let him go. Just he don't bother me no more.
All right. Come on, you. You can consider yourself a very lucky man to have.
The officer took me down to my room. And I had to promise I wouldn't bother the old man anymore. And then I had to listen to Mrs. Snyder complain about the rent. But after they were gone, I lay down on the bed and I tried to sleep. But I couldn't. I watched the day darken outside my window into dusk, and then night. And with the night, she started singing again. But I pulled the pillow over my ears and I fought against her. I would have succeeded, too, if they hadn't started arguing. I'd never heard that before. In all the months I'd lived in the apartment house, I'd never heard the woman speak. I fought against it as long as I could. And then I crept out of my room and up the sides of the steps. And as I stood outside the door, I could distinctly hear two voices, a man's and a woman's.
All your fault.
No.
If you'd stayed in your place, this never would have happened.
You were the one who wanted him up here. I never wanted any part of it. Why don't you let me go?
No!
Please, don't hit me.
Well, this was more than I could stand. I slipped the key out of my pocket and into the lock quietly.
No, I've done what you wanted. Why don't you let me go?
You'll never leave me.
I threw the door open and ran into the room. And what I saw made me so paralyzed with fear that all I could do was stand there and scream.
I saw it. I tell you, I saw it.
I tell you, I am innocent. Don't listen to him. He's a monster, a maniac, a lizard.
He's crazy.
I am not. I tell you, I saw it with my own eyes. When I came into the room, there were two of them, monsters, lizards, whatever they are.
And when they saw me, he changed himself into the form you now see. And she shrunk before my eyes into a little green snake that slithered under the couch.
Ah, he's crazy. I told you that before.
But I saw it.
Get him out of here.
Look under the couch. There's a little green snake.
Take him to the hospital and the rest of you people clear out of here.
Why does the man persecute me?
He's lost his mind, Mr. Steinmetz.
I knew all along he was crazy. He never pays his rent.
I can promise you he won't bother you anymore, Mrs. Steinmetz. We'll take him down and have him committed. If you like, you can come down tomorrow and sign a complaint.
No. Just so he don't bother me anymore.
Well, he won't bother you anymore. I can promise you that. Good night, Mrs. Steinmetz.
Good night.
Are they all gone?
Yes, they're gone. You can come out now, dear.
It's too bad they unbalance so easily.
Yes, it is. It's because they only have the five senses to rely on. Keep changing the impressions their senses get, and they go mad. It's not their fault. They're inferiorly made.
Can't we go home now? We found out what we came to find out.
Yes. I'm tired of this planet anyway.
Suspense. You have been listening to The Green Lorelei, written for Suspense by George Bamber.
Suspense from the 6th of November, 1960, on CBS, on Tuned to Yesterday, bringing the curtain down on this hour of mystery. I hope you can be with us again for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.